The Size of the Soul, written by SPQR, read by Silvercat 1620. Summary. Obi-Wan detours to the first floor gents, possessed of some mad, delirious idea that it's going to be written all over his face. But in the mirror, he doesn't see anything unusual. Dark circles under the eyes, hair rumpled, his jacket in need of a good pressing. All the evidence is interior. The most damning exhibit in the is the sensation that his soul has exited his body, that he is now observing an exhausted and overworked doctoral candidate, but that the man in the mirror is not himself. There is nothing on his face to suggest that last night he bashed Chief Palpatine to death with a huge brass paperweight. Notes. Sorrow and love, life, in other words, cannot be considered a sickness because they hurt. Italo Civevo, Zeno's Conscience. It's in the papers the next morning. Fall from disgrace. Ex-Senator Palpatine plunges 80 stories from Manhattan penthouse. Obi-Wan stops in the middle of the sidewalk staring at the newsstand. The decrepit old geezer stares back from the front page of the Times, the Post, the Daily News, even bloody USA Today. Pedestrians jostle past on their way into the subway. For the most part, their eyes are down, headphones engaged, locked in their own worlds. No one is paying him any attention. But still, Obi-Wan's hands shake as he fumbles out his billfold, thumbs over a few dollars for the Post. He skims the article on the subway, standing jammed between a pole and a troop of very rambunctious gentlemen in a boombox, then floats numbly back into the world with words like investigation and suspicious pinging around in his mind. By the time he makes it to campus, he's trashed the paper, feeling somehow observed, itchy, like just carrying it is enough to connect him to the crime, never mind that the Post has a circulation somewhere north of 1 million a week. It starts raining on his way across the quad, but unlike the students popping up from the grass and from benches around him, he doesn't run for cover. Somehow it feels wrong to do so. Instead, he stands at the bottom of the stairs to the building where his advisor's office is, already late to their 9 a.m. meeting, and lets the rain fall on him until his tweed smells like horsehair and the humidity has made his skin sticky. Distantly, Obi-Wan notices his phone ringing. He digs it out of his satchel, answers. Hey, it's Anakin. Did you hear? Obi-Wan swallows. He suddenly feels as if he might vomit. Yes, he manages to say. Yes, I just saw. Fucking typical of dear old Palps, taking a nosedive from Park Avenue the night he's supposed to fundraise for Padme. Anakin, Obi-Wan interrupts abrupt. He doesn't know why he said it even after he does, but Anakin's cavalier tone, how he's reacting to Palpatine's untimely death, as if it's some great lark, it makes him feel boxed in, vertiginous, panicked. Obi-Wan? Anakin asks after a minute. What is it? Are you okay? Obi-Wan clasps a hand over his mouth hard, then takes it away and makes himself say, Yes, sorry, I'm all right. It's just that I'm late for a meeting. Your advisor, right? Yoda? Yes, exactly. I've got to. How's the dissertation going? You'll have to tell us all about it tonight. You're still coming, aren't you? Padme's counting on you for at least 5-minute reprieve. I'll be there, Obi-Wan promises, though at this point it seems somehow unlikely he'll ever even be alive tonight, let alone capable of attending a political fundraiser. I'm sorry, my dear. I've really got to. Go, yeah, Anakin says. Good luck. See you later, yada yada. Obi-Wan hangs up without returning the goodbye. He detours to the first floor gents before going to see Yoda, possessed of some mad, delirious idea that it's going to be written all over his face. But in the mirror, he doesn't see anything unusual. Dark circles under the eyes, hair rumpled, his jacket in need of a good pressing. All the evidence is interior. The most damning exhibit is the sensation that his soul has exited his body, that he is now observing an exhausted and overworked doctoral candidate, but that the man in the mirror is not himself. There is nothing on his face to suggest that last night he bashed Sheev Palpatine to death with a huge brass paperweight. How did you know? Obi-Wan overheard Asabe ask Padme once. I mean, when you really knew that this was it, that the overgrown douche nozzle you call your fiancé was the one, how did you know? If they'd been in front of the cameras, if it'd been a journo asking, Padme would have laughed charmingly and said, "Oh, I just knew." After all, the best political answer was always what people expected to hear. And since Padme was at that point gearing up to challenge the president pro temp for his New York Senate seat, the political answer would have been the smart one. But they weren't in front of the cameras. They'd managed to shake the hangers-on for a furtive, centripetal little get-together in one of the dive bars Obi-Wan and Anakin had frequented back in Anakin's undergrad days, and they were celebrating the engagement much the same way new parents celebrated a few hours of uninterrupted sleep. Quickly, wholeheartedly, knowing that soon the baby would start screaming again and the brief miracle of silence would be over. In this instance, the baby was Padme's campaign, and at Obi-Wan's experience, a senatorial campaign needed to be burped and fed and checked on rather more frequently than the average infant, so the metaphor seemed apt. He'd left Anakin in the corner with Mace smashed off his face and trying to headbang, even though the bar was playing John Denver. The groom-to-be had sent him for another round of shots, and Obi-Wan was waiting patiently for the bartender to cut them with water, leaning against the bar next to Sabe and Padme, close enough to watch the answer form in Padme's mind, to watch her think about how it was going to feel to say it out loud, wrinkle her nose and stir her drink, stalling. "Come on," Sabe elbowed her. "You can tell me anything. I was there the night you lost your virginity to that awful, awful nerd." "Oh, God, don't," Padme blurted, covering her eyes, laughing helplessly. "Okay, okay, I'll tell you, but it sounds stupid." Sabe settled back, sipping her drink expectantly. "All right, so," Padme began, "you know the first time we met and he threw up on me? Like, all over my dress. He was maybe, I don't know, 15 or 16, I was 18, and cougar," Sabe teased. "You are the worst." Padme took her drink away in punishment and held it over her head, ignoring the fact that Sabe was taller and got it back immediately. "Anyway, he threw up all over me at my first ever fundraiser, but all I could think about afterwards was whether he was okay. I spent the rest of the night kneeling in the men's bathroom with dried puke all over my skirt, petting his hair and telling him stories about going to school in Austria."
"That's a disgusting story," Sabe declared.
"And I don't mean adorable. I mean, like, literally disgusting. He puked on you? You asked me when I knew. Well, that's when I knew." Padme shrugged a little, self-deprecating and moony, like girls in love were always shrugging in movies. "There's nothing he could do, nothing he could go through, where I wouldn't want to be right there with him." It was then that her eyes flickered up and found Obi-Wan over Sabe's shoulder, and Obi-Wan felt abruptly caught, pinned, like she knew everything. Often he had the sense that there was a dark cloud in front of his face, obscuring him from the world, but right then he was a pane of glass. Padme could see it all, that her fiancé's best friend was in love with him, that he understood exactly what she had just described because he felt it too, for the same man. She would have been well within her rights then to stand and accuse him, to put it all in plain language. Obi-Wan had never really had any real claim to Anakin, and he would have gone in an instant, without a fight, a stray dog put back on the street. But she said nothing, and as Obi-Wan turned to accept the tray of watered-down shots from the bartender, he entertained, briefly, the fantasy of talking to her about their shared obsession. She was, after all, the only person on Earth who could truly understand what he felt, the ordeal of loving Anakin Skywalker. Understood what it was like to be driven to distraction by the golden curve of his smile for hours and sometimes days on end. What it was like to lie awake at night, so hungry for him that it was difficult to draw breath. What it was like to love him and hate the fact of that love at the same time, as if it were something that had been inflicted on an unwitting victim. Anakin, some criminal fiend for having inflicted it. Or maybe she wouldn't have understood any of that. Maybe the pain of having Anakin and the pain of wanting him were two separate things entirely. Maybe Obi-Wan's experience of love had been poisoned, time and time again, by his being alone in it.
"Obi-Wan!" Anakin hollered from the back corner. I'm feeling sober here, man. You better hurry up with those shots. And Padme's gaze gave way to a bemused smile, sharing the secret of their affection between the two of them. And Obi-Wan had to look away before the hot, muscular roil in his chest turned fully into jealousy. All day, Obi-Wan feels as if he's a moment away from being apprehended, as if he has a scarlet letter emblazoned on his chest, M for murder. He floats through his meeting with Yoda on autopilot, and is plagued all through his first class of the day by visions of SWAT teams bursting down the lecture hall door, screaming men in black Kevlar storming down the center aisle, his students staring on in horror as he's escorted out in handcuffs. He's never really imagined that he might one day become a murderer. He supposes most people probably don't, until they have to. But even if he had done, he's not sure he would have anticipated this. The passion of the moment, yes. The strong sense that he'd been swept away by a wave of something outside himself, certainly. But not this awkward, nervy, and twitchy aftermath, when what he wants more than anything is to blurt out the truth to the first sympathetic listener he finds. By the time he makes it to 7 p.m. in Padme's fundraiser, magnificently put on at the MoMA, not that Obi-Wan has the presence of mind to appreciate the decor, he has come very close to confessing his crime to a very great number of people. He felt it on the tip of his tongue for the entire journey from campus, standing on the subway next to a beleaguered mother with two screaming kids, paying the supremely uninterested cashier at a tourist bodega $12 for an overpriced pack of Mavs, being hustled past security by Padme's terrifying personal assistant, Dorme. It's rather a miracle that he doesn't tell Anakin the moment he sees him. He's never kept many secrets from him, apart from the obvious one, and spotting him over at the entrance to the gallery, shaking hands and playing the part of the dutiful husband in his all-black suit, Obi-Wan has the abrupt sense of having come home finally after a long time away. Never mind that he spoke to Anakin just this morning, or that he saw him not 2 nights ago for dinner at his and Padme's brownstone. His confession is kept at bay only by the distance and the people between them, and the fact that they're in public. Anakin looks over and meets his eyes, triggered no doubt by the innate sense he always seems to have that tells him when Obi-Wan is in a room. Without bringing eye contact, he leans over to murmur something to Sabe, then ignores her clearly irritated response to back away, winding through the room towards Obi-Wan. "Thank God," he says when he reaches him, steering him toward the gallery exit with his head bent close, voice low. If I have to tell one more rich old lady how nice her fucking brooch looks, I'm gonna hurl. Let's go outside. Out on the fire escape, where the caterers come to smoke, Anakin rips open the pack of Mavs and lights one like they're going out of style. Fuck, he mutters around it. I really gotta quit these before the twins get here. And I mean actually quit. Best of luck, dear, Obi-Wan says mildly. His heart's not in it, but it's what he's supposed to say, what he's expected, and, after all, the smart answer is the political one. There must be something in his tone, though, because Anakin regards him strangely as he leans back against the rail. It's starting to rain again, turning the alley into a smeared watercolor, the steam and the orange sodium lights. Anakin's hair is combed back, which means Padme or one of her staff probably did it for him. His eyes are flinty, like blades, and Obi-Wan is struck by the sudden urge to flatten his hand on the smooth, warm skin of his back, where he's all body. The body can't lie. Not Anakin's, at least. Not to Obi-Wan. Last night, when Obi-Wan picked up that paperweight, the sensation that overcame him felt very much like love. He joins Anakin at the rail to avoid having to meet his eyes. Where's Padme? He asks. She's going to be late. Anakin turns around, putting them shoulder to shoulder. She decided to pay a visit to Palpatine's kid, offering condolences and all that. That's kind of her, Obi-Wan says numbly. Anakin shrugs. Obi-Wan feels it against his arm. Obviously, our official statement is that we're, you know... Anakin takes a tight drag. Shocked and saddened by the loss of such a pillar of the party, such an institution, yada yada. But between you and me, this is great for the campaign. All those ancient hags who were holding grudges about Padme running against the president pro temp don't have any excuse not to back her anymore. With any luck, this next term, she'll actually get some shit done. Obi-Wan realizes that his hands are shaking and clasps them. Right, he says. He's aware that there's a natural lull in the conversation, that he should say something to fill it, but he can't for the life of him think of what. Silver linings, I suppose. Hey. Anakin's watching him again from the point-blank range, eyes squinted. You seem distracted. Did something happen? Obi-Wan shakes his head. The confession presses behind his teeth. Something about your dissertation? Anakin asks. The guilt is miserable. It feels like a sickness, like poison building up in his veins, a black blockage in his organs, and it is excruciating to take the out. To let himself slide deeper into illness when Anakin is standing here offering the cure. But Obi-Wan does. Yes, he says, once more looking away. Perhaps he'll be looking away for the rest of his life, he thinks, aggrieved by the idea. Perhaps the language that he and Anakin speak only with their eyes is already a dead one. Yes, trouble with the dissertation, that's all. Anakin's quiet for a beat, like he might challenge him. Obi-Wan wants, desperately, for Anakin to challenge him. But he doesn't. After a minute, he clasps Obi-Wan on the shoulder, jostling him the way men jostle their friends instead of hugging, and reassures him. You'll figure it out, man. You always do. Drawing on the heretofore inaccessible reserves of strength, Obi-Wan musters a sad smile. Not this time, he thinks, but doesn't say. He feels like a man who has already been caught and sentenced, who lives in a windowless box at the end of a very long, windowless hall leading to the room where he will die. Not this time, my friend. At a certain point in his life, Obi-Wan had decided to expect, as a matter of course, that everyone he cared for would hurt him, that there was no escaping it, and that it was just a consequence of love. He thinks that most people probably know this instinctively, that they don't have to shore themselves up against the possibility quite like he does. But it's helped him nonetheless. It helped him through the initial pain of loving Anakin, like falling down a mountain in fits and starts, scrabbling for handholds with bloody fingers, and eventually surrendering to free fall, crying bitterly all the way. And it helped him endure Padme and Anakin's long courtship, propping him up like a crutch until one day he arrived at the restorative realization that he would do anything, suffer any torture and any indignity, to see Anakin happy, to keep him whole. Obi-Wan has always had the acute feeling that his soul was small, that besides such souls as Anakin's and Padme's, it could not possibly measure up. So it makes sense that he should exist only in fealty to others. When I first met Anakin, he was 12, and he was a terror. Obi-Wan's best man's speech had begun at the reception after the wedding. There was a smattering of laughter. Obi-Wan received it with a gracious smile, but he wasn't looking at the crowd, at the ballroom. He was looking at Anakin, only at Anakin. Because he suspected that this was the closest he would ever come to getting to express to him the true depths of his devotion, and he didn't want to squander it. Firstly, he was driving a car. On top of that, he was going 80 miles an hour straight down Broad in the middle of the night. He didn't say the rest. That Anakin's mother had been in the passenger seat, that he'd been driving to the hospital, that they'd met because Obi-Wan was alone in the ER waiting room with a broken arm, dumped unceremoniously by an uninvested foster parent, and left to make his own way home. He didn't need to say all that aloud because Anakin knew, and he could read what Obi-Wan meant in his eyes. And this was only for him. The memory of how he'd sobbed against Obi-Wan's shoulder, how in the damp midst of his collapse he'd noticed Obi-Wan's sharp breath of pain and transitioned quickly to holding Obi-Wan's head against his chest, patting his hair and soothing him through his pain. Obi-Wan was a teenager, old enough that he should have been embarrassed to be comforted by a child. But when he thinks of that awful night now, all he remembers is a sort of joint stubbornness. Two tow-headed boys, huddled alone in the corner of the ER, forgotten and banded together in their abandonment. The laughter in the ballroom rose and fell dutifully at the tease, and Anakin was smiling as well, but not because of anything funny. In the low light, his eyes looked wet. "He was a terror," Obi-Wan repeated, with the awful sense that he was letting something go. "And I loved him immediately." A coward, as always. He averted his gaze before he could see Anakin's reaction. Padme dragged him onto the dance floor later, when Obi-Wan was attempting to make his way through the crowd of drunk second cousins to install himself at the bar. He tried to demur, but Padme wouldn't hear it. She threw her arms around his shoulders and dragged him with her whole weight, pulling him into the cloud of her flowery smell and her enormous white skirt, swaying until he was forced to put his hands on her waist or send them both tumbling over entirely. "Thank you," she told him forcefully, his head pressed between her hands. Her face was flushed with the heat of the crowd, or drink, or excitement. It was impossible to tell. "That was a beautiful speech. It meant a lot to him, to hear you say it." Obi-Wan had the sense that he was a stain on an otherwise lovely frock, that somehow his existence was incongruous with the idea of a wedding, and that he shouldn't be here at all. But he was grateful to her, in his own clumsy, well-meaning way, for doing what he couldn't, what he was not in a position to do, for saving Anakin and elevating him out of the ignored half-world where he and Obi-Wan had grown up, the world of orphans and taunts and petty thieves. And in that moment he realized that he would suffer for her the same tortures and indignities he would suffer for Anakin, because now they were one in the same. "So, I was only telling the truth," he assured her. Padme kissed his cheek, and then his forehead, and oddly, the corner of his eyebrow. "Thank you anyways," she said, her voice a puff of warm air on his skin, then settled back on her feet to look him in the eye. "I want you to know I'm never going to take him from you." It was kind of her to say, but it was already a lie. If he'd been a better judge of his own character, Obi-Wan might have anticipated what came next, stumbling across them in the coat closet, the impression of their rough secret movements in the dark, which once he knew he could never forget, how gradually he began to realize that there was no part of Anakin he didn't love, and Padme was a part of him now too. It was his destiny to damn himself twice over. But his soul was small and accustomed to pain. It was no trouble at all to accommodate another wound. Obi-Wan endeavors at first not to sleep. He was swept back to the Nabari brownstone after the fundraiser, entangled as usual in Anakin and Padme's post-mortem bitch-fest, fed a late dinner of beer and reheated Chinese takeout, and installed in the guest room in spite of his protests at having papers to grade. And he knows that if he falls asleep, he runs the likely risk of waking up screaming. The master bedroom is just across the hall, and Obi-Wan knows from experience that there's not much of a sound barrier afforded by the distance. If he wakes screaming, there's not a chance in hell that Anakin and Padme won't hear him, and they aren't likely to leave him alone once that occurs. Obi-Wan has no faith in his ability to come up with a convincing lie, not when Anakin sometimes seems to know him better than he knows himself, and implicating either of them in his crime is out of the question. There's nothing to do but stay awake. Luckily, he really does have papers to grade, so he settles in at the desk and opens the window, hoping the cool air and the noise of the city will keep him alert. But the papers are from his freshman class, id est, very repetitive and unintelligent, and he was up all last night cleaning up after a murder. He hasn't had such an emotionally taxing 24 hours in a long time, and soon enough it starts raining again, the hard, driving rain that only ever seems to come in the middle of the night, erasing everything but itself. Obi-Wan's eyelids grow heavy, and before he knows it, he's asleep. "Ruin them," Palpatine sneers, his face twisted with hatred. I'm going to ruin them, and you're going to help me do it. The paperweight takes him in the side of the head, before Obi-Wan even knows he picked it up. Blood splatters across the desk. Palpatine is still alive, swaying upright, his yellow mouth opening and closing like a fish. One of his pupils is blown, blood leaking into his brain. Obi-Wan thinks of Anakin in his office yesterday morning, leg bouncing, springing up from his chair as soon as Obi-Wan arrived, seizing him before he could even take off his coat. "She's pregnant," he'd said. "Twins! Twins! I'm going to be a father!" His laughter was high with that hysterical mix of elation and panic. On the desk, speckled with blood, is Anakin's complete psychiatric history, including his time in rehab.
"Ruin them," Palpatine had said.
The old man wheezes, choking on his own blood, reaching for the back of his chair as he staggers, and before he can think of what he's about to do, the line he's about to cross, Obi-Wan lunges forward in a sudden violent rush and hits him again, and again, and again, too taut with fury to make a single sound, that snake-like body writhing and dying underneath him, the battered skull caving like wax. "Obi-Wan!" The scene shifts abruptly, like changing a slide. Palpatine's blood-soaked office and the glittering skyline 80 stories up gives way to Anakin and Padme's guest room, the window still open, red ink running, and the papers on the desk soaked with rain. There's a delay between when his eyes open and when he comes back to his body. Sensations return one at a time. Rain, cold and wet on his skin, plastering his hair to his head. A stiffness in his neck and shoulders from sleeping at the desk. His heart beating so fast it makes his body tremble. "Hey!" Anakin is kneeling beside him, his forearms braced against Obi-Wan's shoulders, hands on the sides of his neck. He looks worried, like he was pulled abruptly from bed, soft, long-sleeved shirt and joggers still warm from his body and from his wife's body, and Obi-Wan distantly realizes that he must have been screaming.
"Sorry," he manages to say. I must have nodded off. I didn't mean to wake you."
"Jesus, don't apologize," Anakin breathes, tightening his grip. "You scared the shit out of me. It sounded like you were being murdered."
"Not me," Obi-Wan jokes in the privacy of his own mind. "I'm all right," he assures Anakin out loud. "Just a bad dream. Nothing more."
"One hell of a bad dream," Anakin mutters, sounding unconvinced. He hasn't let Obi-Wan go yet, and he's searching his face the same way he did earlier, the way he always does when he suspects Obi-Wan's hiding something. Obi-Wan covers Anakin's hands with his own.
"I'm all right, my dear. I promise."
Anakin opens his mouth again, still frowning, but before he can say anything, Padme interrupts. "Annie?" She's standing at the open door, pulling an oversized robe that must be Anakin's closed around the cinch of her waist. She's not showing yet. Won't be for some time. But Obi-Wan is struck abruptly by the reminder that there are four people he needs to protect in this room. Not two. Padme tucks her hair behind her ears, bleary.
"Is everything okay, Obi-Wan?"
"Fine,"
Obi-Wan tries to lie, smiling tremulously. But Anakin scowls and mutters, "Fine my ass." Then hauls him up from the chair and into the bathroom, where he turns the shower on as hot as it will go and bullies Obi-Wan into strip in the gathering steam. Having known each other since they were boys, they've not much left in the way of bodily secrets, but still Obi-Wan's not expecting Anakin to follow him into the shower, yanking the curtain closed roughly behind them.
"Since when do we keep things from each other?" he demands.
Obi-Wan has stopped shivering, warmth restored to him by the water and the steam. But now he's knock-kneed for another reason entirely. It's been a long time since he was truly alone with his best friend, without all the trappings of modern life interfering. And with both of them standing here naked, it seems unconscionable not to be touching him, stealing as much of him as he can get, for as long as he can get it. When they were children, and Obi-Wan was living with Anakin and his mother, Anakin used to crawl into his bed after a nightmare, curl up near his head ostensibly like a cat, so that when Obi-Wan woke, he did so with Anakin's fingers knotted in his hair, fisted in the shirt over his chest. But now Anakin has a wife, and he's going to be a father, and as someone who loves him, it's Obi-Wan's duty to keep the distance and bear it.
So he lies.
I'm sure I don't know what you mean.
Anakin glares like a wet, angry cat. He has the look of a man involved with intense and enormous thoughts, which won't survive being put into words. All he says when he finally speaks is, "Bullshit! That is such bullshit! You really think I can't tell?"
"Tell what?"
Obi-Wan mutters, avoiding his eyes. "Really, Anakin, there's nothing." Anakin seizes him by the shoulder, suddenly frantic. "Look at me. Look at me, baby," he demands. The endearment has the same effect as a slap to the face. Obi-Wan's eyes snap to him. Anakin has always been able to maintain his manly demeanor even in the middle of the night, even when asleep, and Obi-Wan has always envied him for it, because the moment right night descends, he always feels like a prey animal, his core scooped out and his resolve weak, and he thinks maybe if he were stronger he wouldn't feel this tug towards his friend, this need to collapse into him and let Anakin hold him up. Anakin's hand slides back to his neck, palm smoothing over the shape of his shoulder. His fingers comb wet hair out of Obi-Wan's face.
"Something's really wrong," he says low. "I know something's wrong, and I don't know what, and it's scaring me. You're scaring me, Obi-Wan."
Now would be the time to tell him the truth.
"I killed Palpatine," Obi-Wan should say. "I bashed his head in and threw him off the balcony to hide the damage. I scrubbed the whole apartment clean, but I'm worried I missed some DNA, or that someone saw that there were backup copies of that blackmail file."
Anakin could call the police, turn him in, and this could all be over.
"But I'm scared too," he says instead. "I can't tell you why, I'm sorry, but I'm..."
He breaks off with a choke, pressing his lips hard to keep from sobbing. Anakin swears and pulls him into a tight, bracing hug. The steam and the hot water insulate them from the outside world, as if there is neither a brownstone, nor a neighborhood, nor a city around them, but only this bathroom, this tiled cubicle of the shower, the slick comfort of Anakin's skin. Obi-Wan tucks his face into Anakin's neck, weak as a newborn, and lets himself be held. The next morning he starts drinking at breakfast and maintains a steady buzz throughout the day.
"Ex-senator to be buried at Greenwood. Service is scheduled for end of week."
Obi-Wan jams the post in the outside pocket of his satchel and refuses to read it until he's given his first lecture of the day. He's forced to give his freshmen passing grades on their last assignment, since he unwittingly sacrificed all their papers to water damage, and luckily the unexpected joy of this announcement seems to distract them from the subpar nature of his lesson, during which he thrice pulls up the wrong PowerPoint, twice confuses Lao Tzu and Sun Tzu, and once spills coffee all over the rug. Everything seems alien to him today. His students, campus, the hallways, even his own office. On the subway this morning, he felt like a visitor from another planet, like he had never before jostled through the crowd on the platform or stood wedged between commuters while the train rattled south, blinking at human faces all around him as if he had never imagined features in such a configuration, two eyes on either side of a nose above a mouth. It was a wonder he'd managed to wake on time, to dress himself, to recall that putting on a jacket required an arm in each sleeve. Words themselves, the most basic alleles of academic existence, look wrong, as if the English language conspired to rearrange itself overnight, and it's not until Obi-Wan is walking across the quad, watching as if from a great distance the motion of his feet on the sidewalk, that he notices, hours late, the strangest part of it all. That this morning he woke up with Padme curled like a spoon against his back, burrowed against Anakin's chest, floating in the warm, comfortable raft of their marital bed, and he didn't even know it. He got out from under the covers mechanically, slowly, carefully, not to wake them, and went to the bathroom to see to his morning ablutions, retrieved his spare clothes from the closet in the guest room, and left the house all in a state of detachment, totally numb. He's not a religious man, but he suspects there are some sins so grave that to commit them knocks you sideways out of life, so that you are forced to live not in harmony with the rest of the world, but in discord to it, perpendicular to society, and trapped forever outside of the places and people you once called home.
A single day of this life and he is already worn down nearly to the bone. He supposes it won't be long now before he stops fighting what he is.
Troubled you are, Professor Yoda says when Obi-Wan arrives later that day to their meeting.
Obi-Wan has just come in the door, hasn't even sat down yet, and he falters. Perhaps his initial feeling that the act had left outward marks on him wasn't so wrong after all.
It was a rather long night, he obfuscates, coming fully inside. Padme's fundraiser ran late.
Yoda says.
Wizened old eyes peer at his student through a teetering forest of books and papers, seeming, as always, to take in much more than Obi-Wan would like.
More than that, it is.
Obi-Wan smiles tightly and says nothing. It's a very dangerous prospect, lying to Yoda.
A peculiar illness, love is, Yoda muses. Complicated. Painful. Heavy. Nonetheless, a rare blessing.
If you trace the etymology of the word blessing far enough, Obi-Wan knows, it leads to the proto-West Germanic blodisen, which means to mark with blood, and to the Old English bledan, which means to bleed. He supposes Yoda is right in that respect.
Reject such a blessing you cannot, the old professor continues. Larger than you, love is. Surrender to it, you must.
What if it's destructive? Obi-Wan asks, sober. What if it hurts all three of us?
Yoda considers for a moment before answering. He's not one to second-guess his own mind, but Obi-Wan knows from past experience that his thoughts are so diaphanous, so nuanced, that they sometimes take careful attention to articulate.
Ignore it, you cannot, he says at last. Postpone it, you cannot. If destroy you, it is destined to. Destroy you, it will, in the end. Only greater then will the devastation be.
Obi-Wan feels his eyebrows grow up. You're telling me it's better to get it over with?
Yes, Yoda smiles. Better to get it over with is.
In spite of himself, in spite of everything, Obi-Wan laughs. Soon thereafter, he gets a text from Anakin, informing him in no uncertain terms that if he doesn't smuggle a pack of Mavs into Palpatine's funeral, their friendship is over. And he figures that's as poetic an opportunity as he's likely to get, as far as confession venues are concerned. The problem is, of course, that he can't just tell Anakin. They've been through everything together. His mother's death, the car crash that turned into surgery, that turned into an opioid addiction and rehab, the insomnia that kept Obi-Wan awake for most of his freshman year of college, when the only thing that could get him to sleep was either prodigious amounts of alcohol or Anakin sitting behind him in bed, holding him cradled between his legs, Obi-Wan's head on his stomach, feeling the rise and fall of his breath. He has screamed at Anakin in the middle of the street at 2 a.m, sobbed beside his hospital bed, lied to countless teachers and principals and deans and RAs, thrown punches for him and had them thrown on his behalf. Once, Anakin rushed across town in the middle of a snowstorm to nurse him through a delirious fever. Once, he bailed him out of the drunk take after Satine dumped him. Once skipped a very important exam because Obi-Wan accidentally caught a whiff of a peanut and ended up in the ER. There's a chance he hears Obi-Wan's a murderer and decides to bind himself to him even closer, to go down together in a rain of fire. Obi-Wan can't let that happen, especially not with the twins on the way. So he resolves to tell Padme first. Sequestered in a small, musty room in the back of the main mausoleum, Padme listens while Obi-Wan talks.
There's a dark, focused line between her eyebrows, a stormy frown without any movement of the mouth. She paces back and forth from the door to the very edge of a beam of sunlight shining through the dust-coated window, and Obi-Wan tries not to read too much into that fact, that she won't step into the sun, that she ends her journey at the very edge before turning back into the shadows. He feels as if he's tainted her, just by saying the words, by making her hear them. I killed him. It was me. But she's his only recourse now. If Palpatine had backups of that blackmail file, then she needs to be made aware. She has to be prepared to act, to defend the man they both love. When he's finished, she stands with her back to him for a long moment, not saying anything. She's in a black dress, modest and very smart, and sensible block heels. The sun, faint earlier this morning but growing stronger, turns her flyaway curls into burning orange filament, like she's wearing a crown, some sort of braided halo. Obi-Wan remembers the first time he ever met her. At age 16, Anakin had announced his intentions to introduce Obi-Wan to his future wife and dragged him to a protest down in Queens, where Padme had been standing on a crate at the center of the fray with a megaphone and a t-shirt that said Free Palestine, delivering an impassioned speech before 10,000 people and a few national cameras besides. Obi-Wan's strongest memory of her, when he thinks of her in her absence, is the night she won the race for the New York 10th. The rain of blue and white balloons, the roar of the crowd, Padme smiling so hard she was laughing with it, Anakin's arm around her waist. Later, back at the house, they'd celebrated with margaritas and beach chairs in the tiny backyard, because once upon a time, Padme, Sabe, and Dorme had sacrificed a spring break to her first city council campaign and sworn to each other that they'd make it up once she got to Congress. On their way up to bed, Padme had wriggled out of Anakin's arms to dart across the hall and peck Obi-Wan's mouth in a sticky, lime-tasting kiss, her smile wide and lopsided and drunk. All these years later, he still remembers the phantom pain of watching their bedroom door close behind them, how his chest had felt like it was caving in on itself, like he'd been kicked. "I'll go to the police as soon as the service is over," he says now. "I wanted you to know ahead of time, so you could... I don't know. Make arrangements, I suppose, in case there's any blowback." Padme turns back to him. She's frowning now with her whole face, scrubbing her thumbnail back and forth over her bottom lip, the way she does when she's worrying intently at a serious problem. Obi-Wan sits patiently awaiting her verdict. "No," she says after a minute. Obi-Wan blinks. "No?" "No," Padme repeats. She drops her arms, spine straightening, invigorated by whatever solution she's come up with. "You don't go anywhere," she commands, heading back towards the door. "You stay right here. Do not even think about going to the police, Obi-Wan. I swear to God." "I..." "All right," Obi-Wan says, bewildered. He watches the door close behind her, then finds that he feels abruptly unbalanced in her absence. Confessing has not yet had the cleansing effect he'd hoped it would. There's a weight gone from his shoulders, yes, but he feels as if the ordeal isn't quite over yet, as if he's still in the midst of it. Probably because no one has cast judgment upon him. No one's yelled at him, looked at him in disgust, taken him away in handcuffs to be Mirandized and booked, and announced to the press as the depraved assassin of an ex-senator. When Obi-Wan sat down to his coffee this morning, he was very conscious, deliberately conscious, of the fact that it was to be his last cup of coffee as a free man. But now it's going on 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and he's still at large. To him, it makes very little sense. With nowhere else to put his energy, Obi-Wan follows Padme's example and begins to pace, tugging at his beard. But not 10 minutes after she's left, the door opens again and Anakin rushes into the room. His eyes are wild and panicked. The instant he sees Obi-Wan, he demands, "Is it true? What Padme told me? Is it true?" "I suppose that depends on what she told you," Obi-Wan hedges. It must be written all over his face, though. The language they speak with their eyes must be alive and well, or else the sixth sense Anakin has for Obi-Wan's whereabouts must extend to telepathy. Anakin looks like he's been shot. like he's losing vital amounts of blood. His face goes pale. He staggers back, hand braced on the mildewy brickwork to steady himself.
"You," he says, choked. "Jesus, Obi-Wan, you... for us? You did that for us?"
For the second time today, Obi-Wan finds himself at a loss for words. Because Anakin doesn't sound disgusted or repulsed or even angry, he sounds like he's in awe.
Yes, Obi-Wan says when he remembers to answer. "For you, dear one, of course."
Anakin makes a hurt sound. Before Obi-Wan can ask him what's wrong, he shoves away from the wall, crossing the room in two hungry strides, seizes Obi-Wan's face in his hands, and kisses him. Then it's Obi-Wan's turn to make a hurt sound, his hands flying to Anakin's shoulders, clutching him desperately. Over the years, he's found himself thinking of what it would be like to touch, not quite innocently, but also not without intent, to put his hands on his best friend the way his wife did in the very early morning, shuffling around each other in the kitchen, the thoughtless, affectionate squeezes and caresses and nuzzling of hair, and now that Anakin's lips are against his, bruising and insistent, bearing him back against the windowsill, it's like a dam has broken open. Obi-Wan is in a great hurry to touch him all at once, his slick hair and the place where the skin of his neck meets his starched collar and the curve of his ribcage under his suit jacket, the warm, virile line of his side. Anakin seems just as eager to touch him in return, almost frantic, though he's more of a single mind. He wraps his arms as tight around Obi-Wan as they'll go, fingers digging in hard enough that there will be livid imprints of his hands later.
"Fuck!" he laments, face still pressed close. "Fucking hell, baby. You've no idea."
"I'm sorry," Obi-Wan manages. He's not sure specifically for what, but he feels guilty and he wants to expunge the feeling.
"I wasn't thinking. And he knew about the Vicodin. He had your psychiatrist's notes, Anakin."
Anakin rests his forehead against Obi-Wan's, just breathing. Obi-Wan holds him tighter, inhaling and exhaling with him. And for a while it feels like they are both involved utterly, body and soul, in the simple task of each other's respiration. If this is his last day as a free man, Obi-Wan thinks he's spent it well.
"At my wedding," Anakin says after a minute, "you said you loved me."
Obi-Wan tucks a stray lock of hair behind his ear, then kisses the spot where his fingers just were.
"Yes, I do."
"How?" Anakin turns and catches his mouth again, vigor of the kiss briefly renewed before he pulls away again to finish the question.
"How do you love me, Obi-Wan?"
And Obi-Wan laughs sadly, pushing him back so he can look him in the eyes. So much of their relationship has been defined by prolonged eye contact. Across crowded political galas, through the bars of jail cells, silent and miserable in the middle of the night, red and furious and crying and imploring. It feels impossible that now, at the end of all things, Obi-Wan might tell him something like this without looking him in the eyes.
"I love you," he says, "in every way that it is possible to love another."
Anakin sucks in a breath, never breaking his gaze.
"Did you read the file? My shrink's notes?"
"Of course not," Obi-Wan promises. Anakin smiles. It's sharp, bitter like a shard of glass.
"If you'd read them, you'd know I feel exactly the same way. That I've been in love with you since I was 14 fucking years old. That I'd do anything for you. To keep you safe, to make sure you're happy."
"Anakin," Obi-Wan says. He feels like something is breaking apart in his chest.
"And it's been killing me these last few days, because I knew something was wrong, but you wouldn't fucking talk to me, and I couldn't do anything about it."
It's Obi-Wan who drags him back into the kiss this time. Sometime later, Padme clears her throat behind them. Obi-Wan tries to push away from Anakin, panicked. Not that there will be any hiding what they've been doing, with their ruined hair and tented trousers and beard burn on Anakin's face. But Anakin catches him with his arms around his waist, holding him fast. Padme doesn't look angry, only bemused. "About time you two talked," she says, then comes to grab her husband's chin and pull him into a short, fond kiss, turning a moment later to give Obi-Wan the same treatment. Her eyes are smiling when she draws back, clearly unbothered by the fact that Obi-Wan feels like he's been clobbered upside the head with a bowling ball. "Now," she says businesslike, "listen up, boys. I have it on good authority that the autopsy came back clean. No suspicion of foul play. Palpatine was well known, but he wasn't well liked, so no one's looking into this thing too hard. Not unless we give them a reason to. Unfortunately, his political rivals coming to the graveyard and then not showing up to the actual burial might be considered a reason, and it's starting in a few minutes. So you two are going to put these on." She produces two pairs of dark sunglasses. "Because I do not trust you not to give the whole thing away with your weird eye voodoo. And we're going to go out there and look suitably somber. Okay? Okay." Which is how, on the day that Obi-Wan expected to be thrown behind bars, never to see the sun again, he instead attends the funeral of the man he murdered, standing between the loves of his life, wearing sunglasses. Padme brings the paper to bed the next morning. "Senator Swandive, Sheev Palpatine's death declared suicide by NYPD. Obi-Wan sits for a long minute, holding the post in white-knuckled fists and staring at the words without registering what they mean. Then Anakin groans theatrically and pushes himself up beside him, takes the paper from his hands and sets it on the bedside table out of sight. "It's too early for a man to feel that much guilt," he grumbles, plastering himself to Obi-Wan's back, mouthing sleepily at the curve of his neck. "No more guilt today. No more guilt ever. Me and Padme are going to fuck the guilt right out of you." Padme snorts into her decaf coffee, curled up on the window seat. For the first time in as long as he can remember, Obi-Wan feels well rested, like he slept long enough to restore himself to the status of full humanity. And tomorrow might be different. He might remember the tiny, grubbish nature of his soul, or the guilt left unfucked might drive him to the closest police precinct, sick with the need to unburden himself. But today, he's in bed with the man he loves. He has been given a rare and ponderous blessing, and whether or not this opportunity ends in pain, he doesn't intend to squander it. So he surrenders. He laughs and turns to kiss Anakin's head, and lets himself be pulled back down to bed. The end.